Hi folks, I am Alan Watt and this is Cutting Through the Matrix.
Now, Margaret Sanger was a great eugenicist who really spearheaded the abortion and sterilization industries. She lived in the US, but she formed a group called Family Planning. She hated various races. She thought they were utterly inferior. Great admirer of Nazi Germany and communist Russia. She loved Stalin as well. She called children weeds, by the way, weeds. And thought having children really for a female was abhorrent, in a sense, like popping out a pumpkin. I think she actually used that term. And you should cringe when you realize the people behind the big movements that are ongoing today. You should cringe when you realize the hatred for humanity that they actually have. After World War II, population control agencies set their sights overseas. In the 1960s, the International Planned Parenthood Foundation. Now, Margaret Sanger was also involved in that. She was pro-Nazi and pro-communist at one point. And she spearheaded along with these particular institutions. And it sounds quite nice, Planned Parenthood, like planning, and parents are good. You see, these are the fuzzy nice words, proactive words, as they call it. So rather than call it what it was abortion, and it was actually forced sterilization. They called it Planned Parenthood Foundation, and they heavily funded it by the Rockefellers alongside the U.S. government. And they played a key role in a coercive sterilization program targeting third world populations. And who's at the top of all this? Connect them all together. They're all in the same club. A myriad of foundations and NGOs. And most of all these foundations also pump lots of money into world depopulation. They call it family planning and health regimes. To them, they're quite right. It's like fumigation. The more abortions they have, the less weeds there are to grow. And that's what Margaret Sanger, the founder of Planned Parenthood, called them, weeds. She loved Adolf Hitler and said so. She loved his policies on racial hygiene.
You know, if you look at this article here, education starts in kindergarten. United Nations radical agenda pushes sex, etc., in kindergarten. They published a new comprehensive sexist guidelines for schools, taking its cues from Planned Parenthood to help teachers instruct kindergartens in LGBTQIA and ideology and practice, it says. Remember, Planned Parenthood is a eugenics program, remember, to get rid of the weeds, as founder Margaret Sanger said. Read it up in their own books, by the way. I'm not making it up.
They altered everything into a communistic system. And therefore, everything that's politically correct is part of the old Sovietized communist system. You understand that political correctness is communism. So this site where the inappropriate data was, listen to this, was Abortion TV on the US, a US site. It says the site is political in nature, clearly coming down on the anti-abortion side of that debate. And the page in question features pictures of aborted fetuses. Before the communists took over, you see, it would be the other side who were trying to stop the abortion issue, because they knew where it was going to go. It was going to go to forced abortion and then eventually to sterilization, because they knew who was in charge of these programs, like Margaret Sanger, who loved Hitler. She admired his eugenics program. Now she's a saint. A saint in governments.
Now, regardless of what you believe in to do with abortion, the fact is, big movements were producing the idea long ago to do with life being cheap. Different classes being even cheaper in the life situation that is. I mean, Margaret Sanger was an elitist in herself. Socialist movements always have been. They always prattle on about the Nazis, which are national socialists. But Margaret Sanger and all the other socialist movements over the end of Fabian Society and so on were completely elitist to do with eugenics and should they breed certain people out, etc. Which peoples should they retain? They really believed in improving the race, as they call it, by selective breeding and literally wiping out undesirables, as they called it. She was all for that. And yet, once they got abortion pretty well common now, the normal, you might say, it's normalised, and then you teach the young women that it's all quite normal, the next step is to, and I mentioned this before, I even read the article in the Air when it was a surgeon who went into the, I think it was the Lancet group or the British Medical Association group, and he gave a speech in one of the universities, in fact, in front of his peers, or almost peers, and talked about some, then his culture, killing children up to the age of three was acceptable. And it's back in the paper again. It's back in the paper again. They try to push. They never go. Never goes away. They always go. They always have the next level ready to go, and they'll bring out ones that you'll think, well, they're hardly alive anyway, and that's how they'll start it all. Well, you know, and give you lots of entertainment again, distract you, and then step it up and step it up. That's how everything works. That's how we're managed. We are in incredible mind control. We're under it completely today. And I mean completely.
And, yep, the future and the present actually contains an awful lot of murder under various guises. And when you go back to the days of Margaret Sanger, who supported Nazism, communism, and every other ism out there, because she truly believed that scientists should have the right to rule the lesser types, she thought that the scientists were the natural aristocracy. And she brought in various means to depopulate the planet. And at the same time as she was doing that, other people were hitting back at all the big foundations that were funding all of these projects, heavily funding them with millions and millions of pounds and millions of dollars, and asking them how come the elite were promoting all of this while they had the biggest families of all down through history and up to the present, in fact. And their answer quite simply was, well, the elites could afford to keep them. That's what they said. And they did believe in eugenics. They thought they were superior and that the world needed leadership, people with the right kind of qualities, genetic qualities. In other words, they think it's hereditary. And the lessers, all the commoners, were just junk genes and therefore would continue to create junk genes. And they didn't want them being overtaken by all these junk genes down below. So they wanted to bring in this new sustainability. Yesterday I kicked off the talk with some quotes from a website, which I'm going to put up again tonight. It's called People for Preserving Our Western Heritage, which simply confirms what I've said all along, that the big foundations and all their front NGO groups, non-governmental organizations that are well funded by the foundations, really run the world. And it's the same foundations, by the way, that are creating the present world hype to make us terrified of a flu that really is very, very mild. It's a common flu. But again, hype and crisis creation overcomes reason and sense because perception is more important, as those in PSYOPs operations are well aware. Getting back to this People for Preserving Our Western Heritage, here's some quotes from these wonderful big organizations that care about saving the earth, as you think. They really are all about reducing the population of the lesser types, those who are the weeds. That's a term, by the way, that Margaret Sanger, the one who brought up the family planning associations, who started them off, who was an admirer of Hitler with the eugenics program. She was a member of the American Eugenics Society, and she called children weeds. Weeds, that's the term.
Part of the thing, too, is life is cheap, as I say. Three Conservative MPs in Canada are calling on the Mounties, RCMP, to launch an investigation into hundreds of post-abortion killings, arguing that the children died outside their mother's birth canal and that the procedures constituted potential homicides. Now, there's a slant in the paper because it's Globe and Mail and they're all for it, but so is every other paper for it, too. because they're owned by the same people who don't mind that, because it's, you can allow it in certain religions, abortion. It says the complaint from MP Maurice Villacott, Leon Benoit, and Vladislav Lison is the latest move by the anti-abortion wing of the Conservative Party, including recent parliamentary motions aiming to make it harder for women to terminate pregnancies. And it says here, the NDP, now the National Democratic Party is left of Karl Marx, you know, believe it or not, said the Conservative MPs are wrongly equating abortion with murder, while Prime Minister Stephen Harper rebuked his backbenchers and repeated that his government will not reopen the divisive debate. So I think all members of the House, whether they agree or not, understand that abortion is legal in Canada. Still, the opposition accused the Conservative Party of continually resorting to backbenchers to reopen the abortion debate. It says these Conservatives want the RCMP to investigate abortions as if they were murders. So on Thursday, Mr. Villacott's office released a letter calling for police investigations into what appears to be homicides. The complaint was filed with RCMP Commissioner Bob Paulson last week, referring to 491 abortion-related deaths that were counted by Stats Canada between 2000 and 2009. The killings appear to have started out as attempted abortions, but the babies were born alive. They survive and then they get killed after birth. That's a big difference, folks. You understand? Because it's got so common, all this kill them anyway, and no one cares anymore today, then they just keep pushing the envelope. Well, where will it end? We've already had certain people from a certain group come out before saying, well, we don't believe that they're really a person until they're about three, so we can come up to the age of three. I've read that article on there too. So where does it end if there's no law at all? Yeah, it says RCMP confirmed it received the letter but did not make further comments. And it says, in an interview with Mr. Villacott, said he's trying to make sure the law is upheld in cases where there was an assault on a child prior to birth and that the child was neglected or further assaulted after birth. He said the Mounties shouldn't use all investigative techniques at their disposal as part of their probe. Aside from whatever people's views are on the bigger abortion question, any law-abiding citizen must follow through in terms of any breaches of the criminal code of this magnitude. And that's true. If they're born, they're born, right? You don't go and kill them after they're born. So anyway, I'll put this article up tonight, and for anybody who cares at all about what's happening in the world like that, most folk don't care anymore. They're so dehumanized by the media and television and movies. So it's what we don't read within these articles are the same foundation's links and financial backing to the International Federation of Planned Parenthood. You know, the one who started, Mrs. Sanger, who had up to five children of her own, mind you, because she was special. The poor folk, she said, their children were called weeds. They're all weeds, you see. The premier abortion services provided on the planet, with the majority of those aborted being from ethnic minority groups, particularly in North and South America, where Planned Parenthood's abortion clinics under the guise of reproductive health centers are located in poor minority group neighborhoods. Planned Parenthood was born in 1942, if you'll pardon the pun, from the Birth Control League in the US, which was founded in 1921. And it gives you a brief control of the birth control movement, and a link to that one too. Anyway, it says, as shown in the article above, the Birth Control League was founded by Margaret Sanger. She loved Adolf, but she also loved Stalin. She loved powerful people, you see. And she says, however, that doesn't reveal is that her fellow co-founder was none other than the father of Bill Gates. Do you know that? Bill Gates' daddy, William H. Gates Sr., was the co-founder of Planned Parenthood. And he's out in the world, you're injecting everybody, saying this will bring down the population, and you can't quite clue in because you're all being dumbed so much down. That fact was admitted by Bill Gates back in May 2003, in an interview with veteran broadcaster Bill Moyers, where Gates stated that my dad was head of Planned Parenthood and it was very controversial to be involved with that. Mind you, so was Julian Huxley as well. He got an award from them. It's just to understand why this is significant, we have to go back to the writings of Margaret Sanger, in which she makes many startling statements with regard to not only birth control or population control or abortion, but in particular her aversion to children in general, and in particular her overt hatred of black children. She says, we do not want to go out that we don't want it to get out, that we want to exterminate the Negro population, she said, if it ever occurs to any of their more rebellious members. And that's in A Social History of Birth Control in America by Linda Gordon. That's one of the statements. Human weeds, reckless breeders, spawning human beings who never should have been born. Margaret Sanger, pivot of civilization. Just what she said that, referring to immigrants and poor people. In a letter to Dr. Clarence Gamble, Sanger stated, we should hire 3 or 4 colored ministers, preferably with social service backgrounds and with engaging personalities. The most successful educational approach to the Negro is through a religious appeal. We don't want the word to go out that we want to exterminate the population. And the minister is the man who can straighten out that idea if it ever occurs to any of their more rebellious members. So, she was also an avid supporter of Hitler, but she also Stalin too, she wrote them both, and wrote to him personally on a number of occasions, praising his work and so on. And she praised him for killing the unfit or feeble-minded. And it was a psychiatric association that was involved in that. A lot of them became Nazis, and some of them even fled Nazism when Nazis turned on them and came to America. So it's quite interesting to see that it's the same agenda that's ongoing today, but it's not just the blacks today. They want, I should have got lots of articles here, but I can't even read you on there, actually. But anyway.
Categories of the New World Order, it's a complete system. That's the whole thing. It's every facet of life, purpose as well, function. In fact, you won't exist without a function in it shortly. That's a big part of it. And, of course, it's to do with eugenics and a new eugenical breed. If you go back into the early 1900s, and even into the woman who brought out planned abortion, that was Margaret Sanger, a fan of Hitler and Stalin. And odd, too, because she was Jewish. I mean, she admired both of them. But she wrote a book called The Coming New Race of Women, you know, and she called it The Race. A race of women, as though they'd be separate from men altogether and specially bred and created, in fact, as a separate, distinct race. This is a very old agenda. It's funded by the richest people on the planet.
Another article, too, is one on Margaret Sanger, the leader of the birth control movement in America, member of the Eugenics Society, a good friend of Julian Huxley, who was the first CEO of UNESCO, that wonderful UN organization that wants to brainwash all of the world's children at the same level for the same things. And she also admired the Nazis and the Soviet system because she was an utter complete Soviet socialist who didn't believe society should be able to do what they wanted to do individually. So I'll put the Mike Wallace interview up tonight, and you can hear this one from way back, 1957. And you'll hear her contradict herself and lie too, and you'll actually hear her getting caught out in her own lies. But a good psychopath does that all the time, doesn't faze him in the least. And it's quite interesting too, from her 2 marriages, she had, I think, 8 children, but you shouldn't really have any if they're the wrong kind of people. And they set up all these abortion clinics, they call them family planning, sounds much better, across all the poor neighborhoods, because she said it too, that she wanted to basically bring down the number of blacks, and now it's Hispanics as well. I'll put 2 links up tonight, one to that one, and one to another article to do with where all these clinics have been set up, not by accident.
From WorldNet Daily, November 29th, 2008. This is the one about the gift certificates. Matters of life and death, outrage over Planned Parenthood Christmas gift cards. And it's by Bob Unruh, 2008, as I say. Planned Parenthood, remember, came out of the Eugenics Society. It was started off by Margaret Sanger, who was an advocate of Adolf Hitler. She adored Hitler and Stalin. She liked them both because they were into socialist policy, where scientists and reason have the right to rule over people, make a better world. And she was into abortion. Of course, the foundations were right there behind them. The same foundations are backing her, you see.
Just reading some quotes that the big boys put out in the past. Remember that Darwinism and the whole idea of natural selection and the betterment of the race, as I like to call it, is part of academia. It's all to do with evolution. You must believe in evolution if you go into the universities in this day and age. It's a must be. You've got to believe in it. And along with all of that comes all of this as well that I've just been reading here, because this is what's all based upon: survival of the proper kind of humanity and not the lesser kind, you see. And they want to get rid of the weak, disabled, and so on. And that's what the whole ecological movement is based upon. Sustainability, etc., is a cover for this particular program, which has been so well documented by themselves and is taught in academia, of course, and is kept out of the general mainstream, at least in its more hard and straightforward form. This is also what Charles Darwin says here: elimination of the poorly endowed in advanced society. Great lawgivers and founders of beneficent religions, great philosophers and discoverers in science aid the progress of mankind in a far higher degree by their works than by leaving a numerous progeny. In the case of corporeal structures, it is the selection of the slightly better endowed and the elimination of the slightly less well-endowed individuals, and not the preservation of strongly marked and rare anomalies, that leads to the advancement of a species. So it will be with the intellectual facilities, since the somewhat abler men in each grade of society succeed rather better than the less able, and consequently increase in number, if not otherwise prevented. When in any nation the standard of intellect and the number of intellectual men have increased, we may expect from the law of the deviation from an average that prodigies of genius will, as shown by Mr. Galton, appear somewhat more frequently than before. You've got to understand, too, this is where the whole idea came from for books, novels like The Handmaid's Tale and so on, when they talk about special breeding, selecting special women for breeding. And by the way, they'd already been doing it back in the 1700s, and Benjamin Franklin kind of touched on that in one of his letters, since he was a member of one of those clubs. But it's a very good site, Margaret Sanger. All her cases are written in it, all her quotes and so on. And this is one of her quotes from Sanger for the feminists out there. Every single case of inherited defect, every malformed child, every congenitally tainted human being brought into this world is of infinite importance to that poor individual, but is of scarcely less importance to the rest of us and to all our children, who must pay in one way or another for these biological and racial mistakes. And Sanger also praised eugenics. His degeneration has already begun. Eugenicists demonstrate that two-thirds of our manhood of military age are physically too unfit to shoulder a rifle, that the feeble-minded, the syphilitic, the irresponsible, and the defective breed unhindered, and the vicious cycle of mental and physical defect, delinquency, and beggary is encouraged by the unseeing and unthinking sentimentality of our age to populate asylums, hospital, and prison. All these things that the Genesis sees and points out with a courage entirely admirable. So she was completely all for it. She was also for sterilization of what she called the feeble-minded. And the U.S. tends to forget that the Rockefeller boys and Cold Spring Harbor went into sterilization right up into the 1970s in the United States by simple court orders. And many people are suing now because they were sterilized by these court orders and classified as retarded, defective, simply not good enough to have progeny. And they also talk about birth control eventually being made mandatory, etc.
This is from LifeSiteNews.com, Monday, November the 2nd, 2009. Director of Planned Parenthood at 40 Days for Life Birthplace resigns after watching abortion ultrasound. Brian, Texas, November the 2nd, it said here, she saw the abortion being performed by ultrasound. I just thought, I can't do this anymore, and it was just like a flash that hit me, and I thought, that's it, said A.B. Johnson in an interview with local news network KBTX3. She'd been affiliated with Brian's Planned Parenthood facility for 8 years and worked as its director for 2. She said she began to feel uncomfortable with Planned Parenthood's business philosophy after the organization, suffering from economic downturns, told her to try to bring more abortions in the door. Planned Parenthood. The money wasn't in family planning. The money wasn't in prevention. The money was in abortion. And so I had a problem with that, said Johnson. And then, of course, you witnessed the ultrasound of an abortion being performed on an unborn child. And that was the end. But you go into the beginnings of it. Margaret Sanger, you have to look into her history. Again, a eugenicist, a Darwinist, and all the rest of it. And she believed in the survival of the fittest. She was an admirer of the communist system. She was a great admirer of Adolf Hitler, too. And she truly was an utter racist of the top, you know, the first quality, you might say, of racism. And she wrote her own books about, she called children were weeds, she says. You just have to weed them out, you know, killing, just weed them out. And that's the great champion of the feminists, Margaret Sanger. At least there's some people who actually go along with it, to see the light and get rather disgusted eventually. Look into the history, folks, of what Planned Parenthood is and who set it up. So it's a healthcare provider announced it will host the awards and dinner ceremony in the Longhorn State to pay tribute to those who have made significant contributions to the advancement of women's reproductive health and rights and promotion of family planning and prevention efforts. Clinton is set to receive PPFA's highest honor, the Margaret Sanger Award. Who was Margaret Sanger? She was the one who set it up. She was a top eugenicist, Fabianist. She loved Adolf Hitler and his policies for getting rid of the weak and infirm and those who are below par mentally. She loved Lenin. She loved Stalin. She loved all of these people because socialism was up her alley. Socialism is a technique they use for all of this, you see. You're just a creature that can manipulate you forever and ever. You are the clay that can keep remolding you into the perfect being. To serve them, that is. So she can get the Margaret Sanger Award. Doesn't that make you feel better, the Secretary of State? As a believer in Margaret Sanger and all her policies of getting rid of all the weak, the elderly, the infirm, and those that they claimed were below par in a few gene areas. Eugenics is out in the open today, out in the open, in your face. But you have a dumbed-down public who live on trivia, and that's why they can put it in your face.
From myself, Alan Ward, this good night to me, your God or your gods go with you.
And now to our story. When Mrs. Margaret Sanger opened the first birth control clinic in the United States back in 1916, birth control was a dirty word. The police threw her into jail, as they were to do seven more times during her crusade, a crusade that still faces the reasoning but unalterable opposition of the Roman Catholic Church. That crusade kept Mrs. Sanger away from her children for long periods. It helped to break up her first marriage. And she suffered constant, harrowing social abuse. Mrs. Sanger, in view of all of that, let me ask you this first of all. Why did you do it? I realize that you had an intellectual conviction that birth control was a boon to mankind, but I'm sure that others have that conviction too. And so what I'd like to know is this. What events, what emotions in your life made Margaret Sanger a crusader for birth control?
Well, Mr. Wallace, it's hard to say that any one thing has made one do this or that. I think from the very beginning, I came of a large family. My mother died young, 11 children. That made an impression on me as a child. I was a trained nurse, went among the people. I saw women who asked to have some means whereby they wouldn't have to have another pregnancy too early after the last child, the last abortion, which many of them had. So there's a number of things that are one after the other that really made you feel that you had to do something
There are some other possible reasons that suggest themselves on reading your biography by Lawrence later. Your mother, as you say, died prematurely after bearing 11 children. She was born a Catholic, was she not?
She was born a Catholic, yes.
And your...
In Ireland.
Your father was a sort of a village atheist who clashed with church authorities, and because of his atheism, his earnings dwindled under community pressure. You and your brothers and sisters were known as, quote, children of the devil, end quote. Could it be, then, that in part at least, you were driven emotionally toward the birth control movement because of antagonism toward the church, because that was a way to fight the church?
No, I don't think I had anything of the kind in mind. I was what I would call a born humanitarian. I don't like to see people suffer. I don't like to see cruelty, even to this day. And in nursing, you see a great deal of cruelty and unnecessary suffering. At that time, there was no opposition as far as the church was concerned, any church. It was mainly the law, mm-hmm. the federal law and state laws that one had to think of. The church was not in my mind at all.
Well, in going after your motive, then, and I will press you just a little bit more about that and then get to the specifics of this evening, but in your motive, in the movement, is it possible that the movement itself, the feeling of wanting to do anything that you felt was important, that perhaps that moved you a good deal? Because the fact remains that you led a movement against overwhelming pressures that stemmed back for centuries. And in doing so, according to your autobiography, you even left your first husband. And you wrote this to a friend, Mrs. Sanger. You said, "Where is the man to give me what the movement gives in joy and interest and freedom?" Now, what was this joy, this freedom that you craved?
Well, I don't remember that letter, how it was written, but I think that it was not a question of marriage at all. There was a certain satisfaction in doing something that was going to alleviate the sufferings of women in particular, and I was quite a feminist at the time.
Mm-hmm, obviously.
And yes, and I naturally didn't want to see women take all the suffering of childbearing and of pregnancies. So it was a pleasure in a sense to think that you were striking at an archaic law, which it was. Mm-hmm. It was put on the statute books by Anthony Comstock some years ago, and no one had stood up against it. No one had tried to change the laws. And at that time, not even a doctor had a right to use the United States Mails and Common Carriers for books, for learning, for anything that he had to do with this question. It was considered obscene. The whole question was considered obscene.
Mrs. Sanger, you have helped to spread the birth control movement not only here in the United States, but in Europe and the Orient as well. Why? Why is birth control of such vital importance internationally? Is it just to save women suffering? Is that the only reason in your mind?
Well, not entirely. The population question is a great concern today, and the rate at which births come in to the... We're saving them now. At one time, when children died, they didn't have the food. Mm-hmm. Today, our population all over the world is getting certainly better consideration and better conditions than they had at the time that I was there. I went to every country because I was invited. And I didn't spread go into the country myself. I was invited to go to Japan and to speak there, have 8 lectures on the question of birth control and peace.
Well, do you believe that birth control is essential if we want to keep millions of people across the world from starving? Is that your thesis?
Say it again.
Do you feel that birth control is essential to keep millions of people across the world from starving?
Well, I think that birth control, if you keep your population more or less static until you pick up your resources, certainly you'll keep prevent their starving.
Well, what's more important, birth control or picking up the resources?
Well, picking up the resources, there's just a limit to that, too. There's just so much. Take Japan. And she cannot feed. They've had the best experts come there when MacArthur was there. Mm-hmm. And the best experts have said they have 20 million more people than they can feed. She's got to be fed outside. And in some way, mm-hmm. she's got to have that kind of help if she's going to keep from fighting.
But certainly around the world, there is There is potential agricultural land that is not being properly used now. Just this past year, on May 21st, the New York Times summarized an important study of the world's food resources made by Professor James Bonner of the California Institute of Technology. Professor Bonner says the world is not using 1 billion acres of potential agricultural land, and he adds that if this land were used and present agricultural land were improved, the entire world could be fed adequately, even if the population increased by one-third in the next 50 years.
Oh, Mr. Wallace, you hear so many fantastic things of what can happen, what may happen. This and that, I've heard it for the last 30 years anyway, to what could be done, but it's never done. And the thing is, what is it now? What have we got today? A very distinguished woman spoke to me about Arizona, and she said, I wish you wouldn't talk about population. She said, all the population of the United States could be put in one state. And I said, what state? She said, Arizona. I said, did you ever hear of caliche? She didn't know that I was talking about a delicatessen or what. I said, well, caliche is harder than any rock, and it is about 3 inches below the ground, where it looks beautiful. It looks if you could have food, it looks if you could have corn or wheat or cotton, but as a matter of fact, you have to dynamite caliche out of the ground in order to have a little shrub, have you a little grass, mm-hmm. or a few flowers. So there are many problems that when it comes to that. And the demographers, I never heard of anyone that would agree with that, that we could have another in the world.
Another third. Well, you say that originally the opposition was in all law, and you have to fight against that. Today, your opposition stems mainly from where? From what source?
Well, I think that the opposition is mainly from the hierarchy of the Roman Catholic Church.
Of the Church.
Well, now hierarchy.
Of the hierarchy of the Church. You feel that the parishioners themselves, the lay people in the Church, are not against birth control.
I feel they come to all of our clinics just the same as the non-Catholics do. Exactly the same.
Well, let's look at the official Catholic position, opposition to birth control. I read now from a church publication called The Question Box. In forbidding birth control, it says the following. It says, the immediate purpose and primary end of marriage is the begetting of children. When the marital relation is so used as to render the fulfillment of its purposes impossible, that is by birth control, it is used unethically and unnaturally. Now, what's wrong with that position?
Well, it's very wrong. It's not normal. It's not, it has the wrong attitude toward marriage, toward love, toward the relationships between men and women.
Well, the natural law, they say, is that first of all, the primary function of sex in marriage is to beget children. Well, do you disagree with that?
I disagree with it 100%.
Your feeling is what then?
My feeling is that love and the attraction between men and women, in many cases the very finest relationship, has nothing to do with bearing a child. It's secondary. Many, many times we know that. You see your birth rate, you talk to people who have very happy marriages and they're not having babies every year. Yes, I think that's a celibate attitude. Purely.
Sure. A celibate attitude, but you agree that Catholicism, according to the tenets of Catholicism, they rule that birth control violates not only the Church's position, it isn't the Church's position, but they say that it violates a natural law, as I have just explained. Therefore, birth control is a sin, no matter who practices it. Now, the violation of the natural law, according you certainly can take no issue with the natural law as the hierarchy of the Catholic Church regards it.
Well, I certainly do take issue with it, and I think it's untrue, and I think it's unnatural.
Well, let me ask you...
Nothing bears it out that it's an unnatural attitude to take, and how do they know? I mean, after all, they're celibates. They don't know love. They don't know marriage. They know nothing about bringing up children or any of the marriage problems of life, and yet they speak to people as if they were God.
Let me ask you this question. Suppose a healthy, a well-to-do couple decide for some reason never to have children, use birth control all their lives. Would you say that your methods are being misused, Mrs. Sanger?
Not if they're intelligent people and they had some reason for thinking of children as a responsibility or some disease that they might have that they wouldn't like to pass on to a child. And I think it would be a very unselfish attitude for them to take if there is a disease.
No, I say a healthy, well-to-do couple a couple that just doesn't want children, and for that reason they use birth control all the way. Well, do you think that that is a misuse of your methods?
I don't think it's a misuse. I think if they're intelligent adults, but they must know what they want. They must manage their lives themselves. And certainly there's nothing birth control than there is in other things that you might deny yourself.
I've asked you your motives a little while ago at the beginning of the program, your motives in working for birth control as hard as you have for as many years as you have. You reject the principal Catholic argument against birth control as being totally invalid. What do you think is the reason, the motive of the Church in forbidding birth control?
You'd have to ask a Catholic that. I couldn't say what their motive is.
Well, you couldn't say officially what their motive is, but you certainly must have an opinion about it, Mrs. Sanger.
Well, I don't have much to do with the hierarchy. Well, and I know that the people that come to our organization and want to have the same methods, or whatever it is that one can have to prevent a pregnancy, that those women will say to us, we ask their religion very often, and they say, I am a Catholic, I was raised in the Catholic Church, and this, my church is wrong on this. This is the one thing. I will never be anything else, but my church is wrong on this one thing. And that is said over and over and over again. So what the motive is?
Well, you won't hazard a guess.
I don't care to. Thank you.
May I ask you why? Now, I know that in private and in public discussions, I think, prior to this time, you have been willing to state your understanding of what the motives of the Church are, and now you would rather remain silent. May I ask you why?
Well, simply because I don't think that this Church has changed in its attitude. Some of the hierarchy have changed their attitude. You can't say the same thing that you might have said a year ago or 2 years ago as to your belief or as to your opinion.
Mm-hmm. Have you heard it said that the reason that the Church is against birth control is because they want more Catholics?
I've read it.
Do you believe it?
Well, they, if you read their papers, where they point out Boston, that's what has happened in Boston, in Massachusetts. Mm-hmm. They have simply outbred the Protestants, and they're in Boston, in Massachusetts, they have control. I've read that in their own papers.
I see. Of course, the Church's answer. The Church's answer, and I read now from a pamphlet published by the Redemptorist Fathers in Missouri, says as follows. It says that point of view about wanting more Catholics is nonsense. Quote, the Catholic Church does not command Catholic husbands and wives to have even one child. The Church considers it more than normally meritorious for them to have no children if they mutually and perpetually give up the use of the marriage rite for the love of God.
All right. Don't quote what they do. So I think that the question in my mind is that they do and order their own people to do as they wish. But I object to their having the same rules for people who are not of the same religion.
Well, they believe, you see, that it is a natural law, not a Catholic law, but a natural law, and therefore a sin not just for Catholics, but a sin for all peoples. And I think that there are other religious groups, the very, very Orthodox Jews feel the same way about birth control. Let's look at another argument against birth control, Mrs. Sanger, published in Red Book magazine in March of 1956. It says birth control is a devastating social force which tends to weaken the moral fiber of the community. Immunity from parenthood encourages promiscuity, particularly when unmarried persons can so easily avail themselves of the devices. Do you doubt that?
I doubt it.
You do?
Certainly.
Then let me read from a news story in the Philadelphia Daily News on June 10, 1942. The story quotes you as urging the Women's Army Auxiliary Corps to give its members, quote, preventive measures against pregnancy, end quote. And you add, quote, abortion and illegitimacy are bound to result if the government doesn't recognize human nature, end quote. In other words, you were not advocating Christian morality, but rather ways for single women to avoid bearing illegitimate children.
Where was this taken from?
Philadelphia Daily News, June 10, 1942, direct quote from Margaret Sanger.
I doubt it. I don't believe I ever made such a remark.
Well, in the same vein, in your autobiography, which you cannot disavow, you wrote the following about sexologist Havelock Ellis. You said he's been able to clarify the question of sex and free it from the smudginess connected with it from the beginning of Christianity. Now, what do you mean by the smudginess connected with sex, and why do you blame it on Christianity?
Well, there's many reasons, of course, to say that we have more records of it from the dawn of Christianity. And I think I was speaking of Havelock Ellis as having clarified the question of homosexuals, making the thing not exactly a perverted thing, but a thing that a person is born with, different kinds of eyes, different kinds of a structure, and so forth. But he didn't make all homosexuals perverts, and I felt that he helped clarify that. I felt that he helped clarify that to the medical profession and to the scientists of the world, as perhaps one of the first ones to do that. That was one of the things that I meant in that.
Mrs. Sanger, do you disagree that Catholics, or do you feel that Catholics should not have a right to have a say when a city administration contemplates spending their tax dollars on birth control or the dissemination of birth control information, something that Catholics believe is sinful?
If they have a right to say what they...
Do you feel that they don't have a right to have a say when a city administration contemplates spending their dollars, tax dollars, on birth control? For instance, here in New York, Catholics comprise about 45% of our population. They're the largest single group. Well, don't you think they should have the democratic right to lobby against having their money spent, their tax money spent, for something that they consider evil?
Well, I suppose they have a right. They certainly do it. But so have the others. If they're only 45% of the population, that is not the majority.
But they have a right to get up and...
Certainly. Mm-hmm. I'd have no objection to having them say that, but I think we should have the same right. I say we, I mean non-Catholics.
Well, of course, this is a little bit at variance with something that you told our reporter earlier this week. You said earlier this week, it's not only wrong, it should be made illegal for any religious group to prohibit dissemination of birth control, even among its own members. In other words, you would like to see the government legislate religious beliefs in a certain sense.
Where these strange things come to that I said them is what I should like to know when.
Well, now, you know that my reporter spent a good deal of time with you. He's a very accurate young man.
Yes.
And this is a specific quote.
Well, I don't think I said it quite that way.
What are your religious beliefs, Mrs. Sanger? Do you believe in a God in the sense of a divine being who rewards or punishes people after death?
Well, I have a different attitude about the divine. I feel that we have divinity within us. And the more we express the good part of our lives, the more the divine within us expresses itself. I suppose I would call myself Episcopalian by religion. And there's many other, if you've traveled around the world, you get quite a bit of the feeling of all religions have so much alike in the divine part of our own being. Mm-hmm. And I suppose you just couldn't put that in a book, or you couldn't put it into a phrase or a sentence.
Do you believe in sin? When I say believe, I don't mean believe in committing sin. Do you believe there is such a thing as sin?
Well, I think the greatest sin in the world is bringing children into the world that have disease from their parents, that have no chance in the world to be a human being, practically. Delinquents, prisoners, all sorts of things, just marked when they're born. That, to me, is the greatest sin that people can commit.
But sin in the ordinary sense that we regard it, do you believe or do you not believe?
Well, what would they be?
Do you believe that infidelity is a sin?
Well, I'm not going to specify what I think is sin. I've stated what I think is the worst sin.
Yes, but then you asked me to say what, and I said what, you refused to answer me?
Yes, I don't know about infidelity. It has so many personalities to it, and what person's own belief is. You can't, I couldn't generalize any of those things as to being sin.
Murder is a sin.
Well, I naturally think murder is a, whether it's a sin or not, it's a terrible act.
In just a moment, Mrs. Sanger, I'd like to ask you about another social problem here in the United States, divorce. Nearly 400,000 couples get divorced in this country each year. And I'd like to get your views on the cause and possible prevention of this problem. Now then, Mrs. Sanger, there are nearly 400,000 divorces or annulments in America each year. What, and this is hard to do in the short time, of course, that we have, what would you recommend to cut down our divorce rate?
Well, as a great many of our clinics are including in the work that they do in birth control clinics, having marriage counseling. So when the woman or the man come and complain of their marriage on the skids, mm-hmm. we invite them to come and have special talks with some of our psychiatrists or others who are making a study of that all over the country, mm-hmm. where we have about 500 clinics. They almost all include marriage counseling and marriage direction.
May I ask you this? Could it be that women in the United States have become too independent, that they've followed the lead of women like Margaret Sanger by neglecting family life for a career? Let me quote from your biography describing your second marriage to Noah Slee. Quote, in New York, Mrs. Sanger maintained every clause of their compact of independence. They had separate apartments. They telephoned each other for dinner or theater engagements or passed notes back and forth. Would you call this a sound formula for marriage, Mrs. Sanger?
Different people, yes. It certainly was for me and for my husband. We had a very happy marriage consulting. He had different friends than I had. And I don't believe in forcing. After all, we were two adults. Mm-hmm. And forcing your friends on another person who may have an entirely different outlook. It worked out very well.
I know that it did. You have two sons. One final question. You have two sons. Mm-hmm. How many children have they?
Would you like to see them?
I would indeed.
As well as
how many children? That's six in this family?
Five boys and a girl in that family.
And in the other family?
Two girls.
Two girls. Mm-hmm. Miss Sanger, I thank you so much for taking time out and coming and talking to us here this evening.
And Mr. Wells, I've never smoked, but I'm going to begin to take up smoking and use Philip Morris as the cigarette for me to take.
Well, I thank you very much, Mrs. Sanger.
Indeed.
In the eyes of some, Margaret Sanger has been a heroine. In the eyes of others, she's been a destructive force. The purpose of this interview has been not, of course, to try to resolve this issue, but to open it to a little sensible discussion. This was done with the feeling that all of us, regardless of our beliefs, can do nothing but profit from a free exchange of ideas.